First case in our calendar is 98-19, State of Ohio versus Angelo Pierce. Mr. Hayes, please.
Challenges for the law, not to be granted by the trial court. And who the day is for the short, and criticize him, we would find an issue that we would say, well, I'm just trying to downplay the egregious
term, it doesn't fit the facts in this case.
Right. And in the other case referring to the young guy, it doesn't fit that fact either. But it's something to say, something to grab the jury's visceral attention, the gang, just like in the mitigation sense, he doesn't get any remorse. That is a powerful hold on the jury, in a powerful effect. Again, they argue the nature of circumstances. If aggravating circumstances, not again the prosecution as well, we're allowed to talk about the nature of circumstances of the aggravating circumstances under Rosenthal. They talk about, quote, does the defendant's child abuse outweigh the brutal death of Mr. Gilling? Now that's absolutely arguing as a whether or not aggravated burglary next. for the state of Jackson. Not every time. I'm pretty sure they don't exist. And they were trying to get it to the same place. And not be more pervasive than the attack is on the first one here. Who had his entire testimony, he testified in longer and far longer than any other way.
Father, and also the father.
they don't have any choice. The little kid doesn't have a choice. But whether he's got a good father or a bad father, whether his father will be kind to him or she got a beating on his spine, that's the only kid's ability to control it, yet it affects him. And then he's a follower. And I think the direct force, he was force action. You know, in a strict sense, he's doing this. He wasn't under duress, particularly psychologically, I think. He can pull the person against the branch for sufficiently pervasive to be told to shoot somebody, to shoot somebody. He told him not to. He wouldn't, although he ended up shooting the wrong one, according to what the
thank you. Today, please, Mr. Springman.
Mr. Haley, get sent to the part of the argument. I'm brought this far as conduct, and I'll direct my comments to that. Seems particularly concerned with what happened to Dr. Walton. I think I want to lay that out a little bit because, quite frankly, what happened there is that most of it occurred at sidebar discussions were rather contentious. Very little of it did occur in front of the jury. So I think the prosecutor has every right here to be a little upset at what occurred. And when I look at it from a bird's-eye point of view, I see nothing but prejudice to say that what occurred. The Honor of Rule 705, an expert has to state the reason for the opinion and provide information for their opinion. The rule is very clear at that point. Dr. Small did not provide the prosecution with an opinion. And the prosecution, I think, rightfully so was upset. Even at one point during the sidebar discussion, the defense counsel agreed that the prosecution was entitled to a certain fact upon which Dr. Small based his opinion. The court went on and gave a ruling at the sidebar to the prosecution and said, this, I'm going to overrule your objection to the prosecutor's objection to some of the information, or some of the testimony of Dr. Small after his opinion. And the court overruled the objection, and I'll allow the testimony to proceed. Anytime Dr. Small is referring to his file, you're entitled to whatever he is using to refresh his memory to base his opinion on. So the prosecutor was armed with that information from the trial judge, and then he asked Dr. Small questions to get the information upon which he made his opinion. Then the defense objected to that, and the objection was sustained. So the prosecutor was not able to get any of that information. And all of that led to was some contentious sidebar discussions with the prosecutor was trying to obtain that information. Nothing improper and inappropriate was admitted regarding this in front of the jury.
Counsel, what about the question of whether or not the doctor had tried to help another murder defendant who killed an employee of
Lorraine
under the service? So was that the question propounded in front of the jury?
Yes, that was. Yes, it was. It was propounded and it was alluded to. I don't know what manner it was for the question, but it definitely was alluded to in the record.
That's why I'm wondering that as I was reading through the various things that you were pointing about and the coach. Is this particular prosecutor an experienced investigator?
Yes. I don't believe it was hurtful. I think this was an exception for that conversation.
Let me just read you what Justice Wright wrote in State versus Lorraine, 1893. We see a continuing pattern in Plaskett to a story of misconduct in Catholic case. Why we see a continuing pattern of prosecutorial misconduct in Catholic cases is beyond me. There's simply no rationale or just reason for prosecutors to overtry these cases. The trial tactics such as were used in this case are deplorable, reflect no credit on the criminal justice system. And we go on to cite back to and a number of other cases, that was concurring decision, Mr. This court has agonized far too frequently with comments that just seem to go beyond the pale, or certainly beyond what is necessary. When you have, we charged that before, it's never been necessary, but certainly when you have cases in which you have little doubt as to what your defendant did, and strong hands going in. How do you
satisfy? I understand, Your Honor. In cases where the evidence is strong, I agree. I don't want to defend against it in my chair. To me, this is not a case that, in my opinion, that anyone should agonize it. In this case, the prosecutor, the first prosecutor to get up in the opening portion of the mediation phase, just spent three or four pages explaining to the jury the weighing process and describe the law accurately, exactly as it's supposed to be, and explain how these cases are difficult for prosecutors, for judges, and everyone involved.
What phase this on?
This is in the mediation phase, in the opening portion of the mediation phase. So three or four pages discussing that. Then in the closing portion of the prosecutor's argument, the mediation phase, the prosecutor in this case spent the first few pages telling the jury, I'm going to make it easy for you. Here are the aggravating factors. Here are the mitigating circumstances. These are what you're supposed to ask. And accurately set forth the law. In fact, I can infer from the way the argument was written from defense counsel prosecutor, there must have been some kind of chalkboard in the courtroom as they were explaining it. You can kind of get that feel when you read it, but you know, that they were explaining exactly what the jury was supposed to ask. And they took a lot of time explaining that. And Mr. Haywood, I know, is upset on the comment where the prosecutor said, and that is an aggravating circumstance for you to consider. And there's a couple of things about that comment that are worth noting. Number one, a lot of times this court has found that the prosecutor's comment on the aggravating circumstances of the case, they can do that within boundaries. And so the boundaries are they can talk about the lack of mitigating weight in the aggravating, the nature of circumstances of the offense. But a lot of times the problem is you're talking about speculation. When you talk about the terror that the victim is experiencing, usually you're referring to a deceased victim. So the prosecutor is engaging in gross speculation. In this case, that comment was in direct reference to Derek Frazier, who was one of the victims of the robbery that survived. And Mr. Frazier did describe a trial of Cherokee experience, and he did say he urinated in his pants out of fear. So that comment really is directed at the nature and circumstance of the event and the prosecutor's argument in the whole. So in other words,
that's not an aggravating circumstance, is it? That's the prosecutor said, how's that for an aggravating circumstance? That's wrong, isn't it, on the law?
Right, but when you look at the comment as a whole, when you look at the entire thing.
Well, the comment as a whole, I have an approach, I guess, to Justice Piper's concern that's a little different. When I read the prosecutor's or the defendant's brief, I haven't read the record yet, I get the feeling that the prosecutors here perhaps knew they were going to get objections and be and sustained, and there were even some where trial counsel didn't object, and it seems to me there probably should have been objections, but that didn't matter to the prosecutors. It's just let's get the conviction, get the death penalty, and we're not going to worry about what happened. This case has that appearance to me. What can you say to me that assures me that that's not the way the case was tried?
Oh, Judge, it was not at all. I can assure you where most of the contention, where you're reading that, comes from this bipartisan discussion, where I think the prosecutor was somewhat justified in wanting, you know, the factual information upon which Dr. Small stated his opinion. They were not armed with any of that information, and most of that was at sidebar. And the court, when it made its ruling, allowed the prosecutor to get some of that information. You know, when I read to you before, it left the door open to the prosecutor, simply was trying to follow the proper instructions. And then asked a couple of questions in line with what the judge said at sidebar. And those were sustained, and I think that's where they, you know.
Was was any of the contention between the prosecutor and the judge regarding Dr. Smalden's notes, was any of that heard by the jury?
Very little. Very little. Some was, and the jury could have picked up on some of it, sure, but very little was heard by the jury. Most of the argument that occurred between the prosecutor, the defense counsel, and the judge regarding Dr. Smalden occurred inside the bar, outside the presence of the jury. But that's where you get the feel for, you know, how that case went. Other than that, I think the prosecutor bent over backwards to be fair. Especially in reading the open portion, maybe it's close to the argument that the prosecutor is going to explain the law to the jury appropriately and properly. And so did the prosecutor in closing up the mitigation portion. In the beginning, he spent a lot of time explaining.
Well, I agree with you there, but it's just sort of slipping in these, like, the, oh, this person testified in a in another case, a rape case or whatever. That, I mean, that's really, so the judge says, well, you discount that jury, but the jury's heard it. I mean, when that happens repeatedly or happens a number of times, you begin to wonder whether this is the modus operandi of the prosecutor, don't you? I mean, wouldn't that be reasonable?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I would too. I would be concerned too. But in this particular case, the record simply is not going to support that. Most of these were outside the presence of the jury. Again, the prosecutors were very careful, I think, in choosing their words, except in that one instance that was cited in the defense brief where they didn't mention specifically that aggravating circumstance.
Doesn't the record support, though, the judge said, don't do this, the prosecutor did it again?
No,
three times, I think.
You know, I don't read the record that way because of the trial court's ruling at sidebar that allowed the prosecutor some leeway to get the opinion for the reason why Dr. Small made his opinion. And when the court did that, it left us welcome for the prosecutor to ask him this question. And quite frankly, I don't understand why the trial court then sustained objections to the question of the trial court ruling. Said the prosecutor could have asked him to direct him or pointed them in that direction. So now I don't understand that part, but that kind of was a problem. I think it was a little bit unclear what the trial court was expecting of the prosecutor. There might have been a little bit of miscommunication there, but certainly there wasn't that evil intent on the prosecutor's part to put in this and put in that. And I don't think, unless I missed it, the prosecutor ever said the defense counsel was an outsider. I don't think that.
Is there any place that we would find in the record that the trial judge cautioned or castigated or remonstrated with the prosecutor for doing this?
Not on Dr. Small. One time.
I'm not talking about on Dr. Any place with the trial.
One place.
Tell me about it.
Robbery situation. The prosecutor started referring to the robbery situation and the plea bargain down to the assault situation. The prosecutor said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. The judge said, you're making this very difficult.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. The robbery conviction.
Yep.
We buy the damage when we tell
them. I misspoke. The robbery charge.
I don't know if you can tell me about that.
Again, you know, not to say that, you know, he didn't defend his criminal case.
Yeah. Counsel, you do the appellate work good for your office or some other case. Do you try to test on the cases as well?
I don't try to test on the cases. I try to test.
I'm wondering, I guess, it occurred to me as I'm reading the question that put an intention in this case. What the training for your prosecutors is before they go and try that case, and whether or not we might not be interested in avoiding this kind of thing, because not just in this case, we're seeing, and you're reading, we're writing about our concerns on this. Should we adopt a rule that requires prosecutors to get special training that the defense counsel have to before they try that case and accept that in jail?
One of the rules that I've always played, I think good health. I don't see where training is
for the other.
I don't know.
It's a complex statute and a whole bunch of cases out there.
The problem seems to be directed in one area. It seems like from the assignments of error that we get from our recent report, it's usually in the closing argument stage of the litigation portion of the trial. That's usually where prosecutors or a lot of misconduct claims are made at that portion. Prosecutors, I think, in this case, and others,
I mean, it is understandably emotional. I think we recognize,
right,
and the prosecutors get a lot of work to do and all of that.
Sure.
But still, it's caused problems.
Quite agree. It hasn't been found for a long time. You know, as far as the case is concerned, you know, if we would have done that, going to the government decision, the low consult decision, that set out that the prosecutor's from the kind of confession that he made today. You know, the prosecutors here, I think, are well aware of it, our office is well aware of it, and I think it shows in their closing argument when they explain exactly how the jury would conduct their mitigation or their weighing process. And at least as far as the case is concerned, and the only reason I think the defense brief shows there might be persuasive misconduct, again, has to be specifically with Dr. Small, and I think, once the court reads that, you're going to find that, again, most of it is sidebar, most of it as well. The prosecutor did have a legitimate point, and that's one thing that doesn't come through as strongly as it perhaps should. The prosecutor did have a legitimate point there, and there was no information that came in evidentiary-wise against the defense during that whole
episode. Could I get you gears for a moment. Appellant advances what they purport to be a new argument on why amendments to the state constitution is unconstitutional. That is the direct appeal. You want to respond to that at all? As I understand the thesis, it's denial of equal protection because everybody else gets the information. The way that we're reweighing the evidence, and he argues that under the case law, we can't do that.
My response is that the municipal district court will have to go to the state court and every defendant will have to have that opinion. The district court is the Supreme Court system, the high court, so everyone is treated equally. Everyone will get the opportunity to have a district court to be the ultimate judge of whether or not the sentence of death is appropriate in the case of the person. I don't see where they have treated the student in this case.
Can the Constitution ever be unconstitutional?
Yes.
How? The Constitution's a compact between the people and its government. Is that right? And the people voted that, didn't they?
Right.
Can that be unconstitutional? Okay. I've been thinking about it.
Okay. Is there any other questions?
I could have said, you saved almost 14 minutes of your time.
Say what you want to think will not reverse 14 years. And I think that's do and what thou shalt not do. And of course, it's good about that. Even Moses, well, they took the animal out of your prosecutor and paid you and paid you. That was pretty good. And affirmed. Moses told still on death row that the prosecutor also scared him so much as well because they're at it again. And I think it's interesting. So many of the experiments responses are arguments like Satan is gone. I have gone on totally reversed. So I think when you look at the areas that he's fighting for, that's the area where the court removes a lot better than what it has said itself. That our statute is not as advanced as dumb and interpreted in it. So if that whole prosecutor he can come up with, I think our headphones are pretty good. These are new. Some of them are new, different as far as expressing fighting ways that he's talking for all the time. But it seems to work.
I'd like to narrow the issues. Is there any question, maybe it's unfair to say in your mind, but is there any question, given the record, of the defendant's guilt?
I think there's a question as to whether or not there's firm guilt against the prior calculation.
All right, let's start with, is there any question that he did the killing?
He has done the gun at all, and the bullet from that gun killed the victim.
That amounts to him killing. Okay. All right. So we know that he, in fact, perpetrated the act. Okay. That leaves us with, did he do it purposely? The argument can't be, Kenneth, that he aimed the gun in a different direction and just happened to hit the decedent?
No.
Okay. And then maybe we get over that issue, so we're to the point where a reasonable jury could find him to be not only the principal offender, but to have committed it and have done so with purpose. A reasonable jury. Well, no, I understand that, and that's fair. That's why I was trying to not say you, but a reasonable jury. That leaves us with the penalty phase, then. Let's assume what I said, for purposes of argument, let's take that. Leaves us with the penalty phase. It seems to me that the majority of prosecutorial misconduct occurred, several instances anyway, in the guilt phase. What would we find in the penalty phase, given the, and accepting the fact that it was all waived because there were no objections for some reason in the penalty phase? What objectionable is there in the penalty phase that would be a strong indication for us to write what you want us to write?
Objection?
No, not... What misconduct?
Well, not only the comments and arguments, which are many and varied, and I think in many respects...
Argument in mitigate... Argument in the penalty phase.
What is that? Why okay. Again, citing... the grief or the anxiety felt by not just the victims but by other people who were there as an aggravating circumstance. Thanks. That's an aggravating circumstance.
But the judge's instructions on weighing were correct, were they, weren't they? And he narrowed it down to the specification.
Yeah, he basically called there three specs for every
breach of the four counts of murder, and they were murdered. However, one of the threats for sitting on the list, I can't see any way that that's all the case. And the second, either not there on the Logan or the Walmart fence or whatever, it should be burned. But the other two, I think the aggravated robbery burglary is not as strong a case for so that's an issue. And then they're weighing too much.
But even if under our 05 review we merge those, we still have substantial statutory specification allegedly there.
Right.
Okay.
Case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion.